This show is part of the RetroZap.com podcast network.
This is Warp Trails, a Star Trek Discovery podcast, a RetroZap podcast network exclusive.
Welcome to Warp Trails, the RetroZap podcast network show devoted to Star Trek. I'm your host, Dennis Keithley, and with me is my wife and co-host, Beth.
Hi, welcome to the second half of the season, everyone.
Indeed, second half. Tonight, we are continuing our coverage of Season 2 of Discovery with a discussion of the most recent episode of Discovery, which is If Memory Serves. This is a full spoiler discussion, so if you haven't seen this episode, you know, go hit pause, go watch it on CBS All Access, and then come right back. We'll be here when you're done. Okay, so this episode is directed by T.J. Scott. If you're not familiar with that name, he has directing credits that include episodes of Longmire, Orphan Black, Spartacus, Gotham, La Femme, Nikita, Xena, Warrior Princess, and Hercules. So he knows his way around a television episode.
Yes, he does.
This episode also ties in squarely with the original series.
Very much so, yes.
Right to the heart of the series. And, you know, that comes up right off the bat. We get the previously on Star Trek title card. And then we have all these scenes from the original series, which was the Menagerie, which I guess also was the pilot, The Cage, which got rejected. In that episode, Jeffrey Hunter played Christopher Pike. And, of course, Leonard Nimoy was playing Spock.
Yes.
There are scenes from when they visited Talos IV, which is very important to this episode.
Mm-hmm.
We get to see the blue plants that sing.
That sing, the singing blue flowers. Yep.
Yeah. And the highlights that we have here they feature the relationship between Vina and Pike.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember this episode. It's been a really long time, but I know over the course of the season, it's come up more than once as we've talked about Captain Pike.
Yes.
So, you know, in about 30 seconds, a minute, can you kind of give us the rundown of what that episode was about?
Yes. The Enterprise crew answer a distress call. They land on the planet and there is a group of survivors that have survived a shuttle crash and are in good shape thanks to the help of the doctor. There is a lovely woman, Vina, among them, and come to find out that none of it's real. Vina is the only actual person on the planet. The inhabitants of the planet actually did destroy themselves in a war, and they wanted human beings to mate to create a slave race in order to help rebuild the planet. And
then I guess my understanding is that Pike had some sort of relationship going on with Vina.
The idea was that Pike and Vina would fall in love and mate and create this race of this family, I guess, of slaves to clean up Thalos IV.
And so keep all that in mind because it does come up later. So we snap right out of this previously segment to a shot of Pike aboard the Discovery. And I have to say, he is a pretty good match for the original series.
For Hunter, they did a really good job matching up. And I hadn't realized it until they did that. And I was like, yep.
Mm-hmm. And so, what's kind of become the fashion for the season, we get a voiceover from one of the characters. And it's been Burnham quite a few times, Saru. Mm-hmm. And in this time, it's Pike saying that, you know, basically, he hopes that Burnham finds Spock before Section 31 does.
Yes.
Speaking of Section 31, we then cut to the ship. I would really like to know the name of the starship. They haven't said it once so far.
Yeah, I know. This season. I don't know it.
But there are Starfleet officers on a holocall with Leland. And I'm not sure what his rank is, but because later in this episode, he's giving orders to Pike.
Yes.
And so which basically suggests that he's somewhere between the rank of captain and admiral. Because he takes orders from Admiral Cornwall
yes.
earlier in the season. But the officers, there are these, the Starfleet Council, I'm not exactly sure who they are. They compose an Andorian, a Vulcan, and I can't remember what the other two were. One race I didn't recognize, and there was a fourth person there. But the Vulcan, it says Burnham is committing another act of treason, is mutinying again.
Mm-hmm.
Georgiou then takes over the meeting. She has ideas of what Burnham might do, about basically looking for some way, non-Starfleet resources to help heal Spock.
Right.
And then, I love this bit, the council asks for other suggestions, and when Leland starts to speak, the Vulcan cuts her off. They're like, I was talking to her.
Well, and, you know, Georgiou is definitely, she said that Leland wasn't calling the shots anymore, and she's definitely following through on that.
Yeah. So, Georgiou's plan to kind of usurp control of Section 31 seems to be going very well.
Yes.
It's a very Terran Empire thing to do, which is to undermine your superiors. So she can't kill them.
Nope.
Or at least not outright. I wouldn't be surprised if later, you know, she does arrange for Leland's demise. But
poor Leland.
I'm not so sure I'd go that far.
All right. But, I'm not sure he's a good person either, but still.
Yeah. So, Georgiou encourages them to put out a Federation-wide alert for Burnham's shuttle, but to exclude the Discovery from this announcement, essentially because she believes that personal entanglements will obscure the search. And she's not wrong.
No, she is actually absolutely correct.
You know, after this meeting with the Starfleet Council ends, Leyland and Georgiou are walking back to the bridge of their ship, which is a two-level affair, as we've seen in previous episodes. Yeah. And they seem to do everything from this one room, except for various holocalls, and they have a interrogation chamber elsewhere. But, you know, Georgiou is complaining about having to rely on computer analysis back in the Terran Empire. She told computers what to do, and they did it. And then Leland snaps back, well, you know, how did that work out for you?
Yeah.
So, you know, not the most pleasant of working relationships here. Then we get Georgiou issuing an order to Pike to comb through the debris field and find out what they can about that space squid. This is to delay them from going after Burnham and Spock. Okay, so this is where Ash shows up in the episode. He walks onto the bridge, and he immediately starts in on Pike about how you're supposed to be concentrating on the probe that attacked us, and I see that you and Saru and Arium are talking about where Burnham and Michael might be. I'm getting really tired of him.
Yeah, I did actually in my notes write, the honeymoon is over between Tyler and Pike. Because it did seem to be whatever compromise they had come to in the last episode is very much over.
Yeah, it didn't last long at all.
No.
And you know, in the part of this episode, you know, Pike will even says to Ash that you and I have been through a lot together recently, but his loyalty is to this crew. And he's essentially not putting up, you know, into an officer that he believes has falsely been accused of murder.
Right.
And he's kind of done putting up with Ash.
Yeah.
So it is kind of I'm kind of jumbling a couple scenes here because do have multiple conversations, but Pike gets around to asking Ash about what exactly was your relationship with Burnham. And, and he first tries to get away with the excuse that was personal, you know,
that's 100% professional.
That may be what it is now.
Yes. Well, and as a lawyer, you should have been pleased of both the questioning and the answering of that whole scene because what is your relationship with Burnham?
Sure, but this isn't a deposition. This is the captain asking an officer on the ship, and the officer owes him a latitude of frankness.
I agree. I did not think Pike needed to ask if it was always 100% professional.
Because Pike is not stupid.
No. I mean, come on.
And so, you know, Ash fesses up that he was in love with Burnham. She had some feelings back, but then he essentially betrayed her. They've gone their separate ways, and now it's a professional relationship.
Yeah, I thought that was very brief, fair summation of their relationship.
Yeah. I also liked the bit while they were on the bridge, all this nonsense about, you know, you're supposed to be investigating the probe was going on. Pike directs Ash over to Tilly. She has some of the best bits.
Her personality
is so fantastic. And she's working at a terminal. She just kind of bobs her head to the sides. You know, step into my office.
Well, and she was completely on top of it. And really, if you want somebody working on a project, Tilly's kind of who you want. She's focused on getting it done.
And then she notes that, you know, she's showing the video of the shuttle exploding and points out that we've collected a metric ton of debris, but none of it is the probe.
Yeah.
And but she does confirm that it's the space squid, which was a big hit in our house.
Yes. Well, we have been calling it the space squid, and it was nice to have that confirmed.
Mm-hmm. So Burnham and Spock finally get to Talos IV.
Mm-hmm.
When they come out of warp, they've arrived at what apparently looks like a black hole.
Yes.
Devouring the sun or something.
Yes.
And Burnham immediately goes to evasive action and tries to get him away there. But Spock starts fighting her for control of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually he wins out and he pilots them straight towards the planet. And right when the computers are telling them about, you know, structural integrity is about to dissolve, an illusion dissolves.
Yes.
And the black hole is dissipated and we're looking at Talos IV.
Yes.
So,
but that's the shuttle wins is worst GPS ever for saying correct course at one point as they're flying towards the black hole.
Like, yeah.
Thank you so much.
But this is another question I had for you.
Mm-hmm.
Why was the computer fooled by the illusion? I was assuming that the Talosians were able to project these illusions and it was a trick of the mind, but they fooled the computer. Now, did that happen during the original series, or is that a plot hole, or is there some sort of a plot explanation for that?
Okay. In the interest of full disclosure, I did not rewatch either The Cage or The Menagerie, but my memory is that the ship's computer did acknowledge life forms on the planet. So I'm going to say that the Talosians can either confuse the computer or confuse the people into hearing what they want, what the Talosians need the computer to tell them.
Okay.
601.
I've only seen The Menagerie, I think, once. And I remember at the beginning of that episode when Spock kind of hijacks the Enterprise and, gets it over there to Talos IV.
Right.
We suddenly get this view on the view screen that is like a camera angle zooming in on the Enterprise. And Kirk says something like, how is this possible?
And that's because the Talosians were projecting it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so,
because that was Spock's court-martial.
And so I was wondering if that was the actual Talosians interfacing with computer or tricking everyone into thinking what they were seeing on the view screen. But
I don't know that it's ever been defined one way or the other.
We'll have to watch that episode and then talk about this again.
I don't think I'm spoiling anything. I mean, we said this was full disclosure. I liked how they modernized the Talosians. They certainly made the Talosians in Discovery less awful than they are in the original series.
Yeah, all right. And that's a good point to pick up here. So Burnham and Spock land on Talos IV. Burnham leaves a shuttle to check out the planet, and she encounters the singing blue plants,
mm-hmm.
which have a slightly altered appearance. They don't look like just a blue painted leaf. They are a little bit furrier looking.
Yeah, there's definitely more CGI technology and budget was put into the blue flowers.
Yeah, she grabs them and they stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I don't know. It was a nice little, and she grins just the way Spock did.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't remember that, but I do remember that. That's kind of like the inconsistency with Spock is that he was smiling and grinning during the original series, The Menagerie,
yep.
when he got here. And that's not something he did a whole lot. So
no.
But she, before too long, she sees someone approaching the shuttle, which is Vina.
Yep.
When she gets back to the shuttle, Vina introduces herself and, is talking to Spock. She remembers Spock from when they were there.
Mm-hmm.
So refresh my memory a little bit on uh-huh. this.
Sure.
How much time was it between when Pike had the Enterprise and Kirk had the Enterprise?
Okay, so I did look this up to make sure I was right. The Menagerie, which takes place in the first season of the original series, is supposed to be set 18 years after their first visit to Talos IV. Which doesn't answer your question directly,
mm-hmm.
but that's what I know.
Because I've been very confused by this because, the Enterprise is a state-of-the-art ship at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's suffered a whole lot of damage, I can't remember what from at the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I always remembered it as kind of being a state-of-the-art ship on a 5-year mission when it came to the original series.
Right.
Now, again, by that point, it's an 18-year-old ship. And, there was Captain April and Captain Pike and then Captain Kirk.
Yep.
And perhaps my memory of this is a little bit fuzzy because the J.J. Abrams movies essentially made the Enterprise a brand new ship.
Yeah, they made it a brand new ship under Kirk, and it was when Kirk got it.
And Pike only took control of it because Kirk couldn't be... Well, that's not true. Pike was originally the captain of it, but he didn't have it very long before Spock and Kirk were both had an opportunity to act as captain of the ship. So perhaps that's where I'm getting confused. But all right, well, moving on. After these introductions, Spock and Burnham beam to the underworld, because that's where the Talosians live.
Yes.
And have been living ever since they decimated their own world with nuclear weapons.
Yes.
Vina introduces the Talosians, who have been invisible or obscuring themselves. I don't know if that was a mental trick or they actually made themselves invisible. What did you think of their upgraded appearance?
I thought they were very well upgraded. I thought that the way that they were presented was definitely modernized I saw them and knew immediately those were those are Talosians. And they have been upgraded, and there's an acknowledgement of the upgrade in technology, and there's an upgrade in the fact that these are going to be shown on HD.
Yeah.
And we need to improve makeup so that it doesn't look cruddy in HD. But I liked them.
Yeah, you know, that being said, I thought they did a really good job with the footage from the original series, cleaning that up and remastering it for HD.
Yeah, they did.
I mean, it was obviously a show from the 60s. Yeah. I mean, that footage is over 50 years old at this point, which blows my mind. But they cleaned it up very well. But I did like the appearance of the Talosians. Because am I wrong? I thought I saw a reference somewhere that the original Talosians from the menagerie were actually all women with makeup, and then they had men's voices overdubbed.
I think that's true, yes.
Okay. Well, and they clearly had male actors for some of the Talosians here.
Yes.
So they changed that, but they did a good job with them. But so special effects aside, they show up and they tell Burnham they can help Spock.
Yes.
And they say that he's experiencing time as a fluid rather than a linear sense.
Yeah, that was cool.
I'm not exactly sure what that means, though. I mean, obviously it's not the way that we perceive time, but what does it exactly mean to experience time in a fluid sense?
I mean, Spock mentions a few things later in the episode that, you know, he can remember tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I think that, to me, that made more sense than I understand what something being fluid is, and I understand what something linear means. But to your point, what does that actually mean? The idea that he can remember tomorrow, he can remember this end of world event,
right?
You know, but that goes back to his childhood. And I know I'm kind of jumping ahead, but he can remember Burnham dying as a child just as easily as he can remember her not dying as a child.
Yeah, yeah, that is.
So I think that goes to it. So not only can he remember things out of order, but he can remember things that might have happened but didn't.
And I also got exactly. That's what I was just about to say, is that he seemed to be seeing alternatives at the same time, and he wasn't sure what to actually believe.
Right.
But so it was just an odd thing to say. But the Talosians tell Burnham they can help Spock, but they have a price. And that is, Burnham must share her memory of the awful thing that she did to Spock.
Yeah.
That basically caused the rift between them.
Yeah.
And she's reluctant to do it, but she does agree.
Oh, yeah. Which we all knew she was going to. The Talosians are generally awful and have, like, no sense of much in the way of morality or privacy. So I was not, you know, that was just their price was actually relatively decent of them, but
yeah, again, I don't remember the series of this, you know, the episode this was based on from the original series, but it seemed an interesting thing to do because it is a, you know, that is a cost. I mean, it is the, you know, don't tell us about, you know, we don't know about your 7th birthday party, you know, and they, you know, they didn't ask for, you know, it's interesting because this was the painful memory that Burnham could not stand to share. It was not the day that her parents were killed by Klingons.
Right. And just how creepily the Talosians asked it. Like, we want to watch you live this again.
Yeah.
It was like, wow. But then you think about the original. It was like, yeah, we need you to mate. So pick a female.
Right.
And just go at it.
That I don't remember. So, but still, it just seemed of all the things they could ask, it was just the, yeah. I mean, it's the motive as to why. It's the, you know, they're collecting these things or what's going on. But let's get to Spock's vision. So there's a whole series of these that come over different events. He shares with Burnham at one point that the story of how he knew where she was when she ran away from home. And this is before we get all the details about what the horrible thing was that she did.
Yes.
But he was in bed and he had a vision of her running through, I can't remember what they called the forest, but this forest on Vulcan, and a creature,
The Vulcan Forge.
Yeah. But this creature comes up out of the ground and starts hunting Burnham and eventually catches up and kills her.
Yes.
And when he had that nightmare, I guess the Red Angel came to him and helped him figure it out. And so he told Sarek where she was, and they went and they rescued her. So they changed time, which is important.
Yes.
The other vision that he shares or that is shared through this process is when he was in the psychiatric hospital that he checked himself into. And when that starts, he's drawing things all over the floor, which is relates to all these red signals, which he's seen. And he knows that they're going to occur. And then the doctor shows up with two guards. And he decides that it's time for him to leave, and because she reports that the signals have been seen and wants his help. So he decides, well, I need to leave and go deal with this. And they aren't going to let him leave because Section 31 is coming to get him.
Right.
And I can't blame him based on what we know about Section 31 now. He Vulcan pinches the doctor and then subdues the other two guards and leaves. So he didn't murder them.
No, he did not murder them.
Despite what they are claiming.
Well, and that's what I am sure at some point it will be made clear. What I don't understand is if Section 31 wants to talk to Spock because Spock knows about the Red Angel, why did they have to trump up murder charges when they could have just said he's wanted for questioning?
That's a good question. I think maybe it is because I can only speculate. But perhaps it is that if he's a murder suspect in a Federation and Starfleet where the officers aren't killing each other like this, he becomes a much more dangerous person that ships will be on the lookout for, as opposed to, oh, someone's wanted for questioning. Well, I'm not diverting my ship for this possible shuttle sighting elsewhere. I could see a captain reasoning that. But, you know, perhaps it is the, also, Section 31 wants anyone who captures Spock to take him seriously and to not try and question themselves. Put him in a holding cell because he's wanted by Section 31, and we'll deal with it.
Okay.
Again, that's all speculation on my part. Sure. So, but then we get to the third vision. He's an adult, you know, at some point, the Red Angel, I can't remember where the Red Angel directed him to go, but he goes to some other planet.
It was cold.
Yeah, and he mind melts with the Red Angel. And we learn out of all this that the Red Angel is a human from the future and is trying to prevent this future in which there is some sort of a force going around the galaxy wiping out all sentient life.
With space squids.
Yeah, with space squids, which is essentially look like the probe that Discovery launched at the Time Rift in the last episode. But these probes are like infiltrating, well, boring into planets and then causing the planets to explode.
Yes, that is what it did to Earth in the vision.
And so the Red Angel is all that is left of sentient life in the galaxy at this point. And so that vision is driven Spock mad. And that's what he needs to be cured of.
Yes. So that is apparently the backstory that Burnham needed in order to, and then somehow through all that, Spock was kind of fixed as well?
Yeah, I think they kind of skipped over that because the Talosians definitely fixed him because right after that, he is Spock. He is talking like Spock. I liked Ethan Peck's performance.
He did a very good job. I definitely agree with you.
Yeah, and then Spock and Burnham are speaking each other. They definitely come off as siblings.
Our children would never talk to each other like that in terms of the actual words, but the tone and the speed and the sniping and the burn at the end.
Yeah. Because what does Spock say? He asks something like, he says something like, you know, ask me a question I haven't already asked or answered, or whatever.
Like a productive question. Like,
is there a productive question that I haven't already answered? And she says, do you actually think that beard is working?
And the look on his face is just boom. I was like, you go, Burnham.
Yeah.
we all thought, we're like, whoa.
Well, it was such an interesting counterpoint to last week's episode when you saw Amanda and Sarek sort of have that logical fight,
mm-hmm.
right? They argued and they had this fight and it had all this logic stuff. Burnham and Spock do it the same way, but to your point, just like siblings. And it was like, logic burn, boom. Yeah.
Okay, you just brought up Amanda. Good point. Something I wanted to ask you.
Oh, okay.
When we were talking about Amanda last time,
mm-hmm.
you were fairly certain that she knew what it was that Burnham did
mm-hmm.
to Spock.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still believe that?
Yes.
You think Spock told her that?
No.
Well, again, because we haven't got to what it was that Burnham did. Yet. But let's put a pin in that.
Okay.
And then come back to it.
The short answer is yes, and I will go into more detail later.
Okay. So Vina then contacts Pike.
Yes.
Scares the dickens out of him.
Well, yeah. hey, aren't you not hearing stuff?
Right. So she has a limited amount of time, but she reveals, they're having a very emotional moment. So there's still this connection between them left over from the menagerie. But in an attempt to convince him, I'm not exactly sure of what. She does reveal her true form that, you know, she is someone who was injured in that crash.
So that's the interesting thing, which is actually as well of a job as they did with the Talosians and updating them. I think they failed with Vina.
How so?
So the idea, Vina at the end basically says that she can't go back with the end because Pike says, come with us.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, because the Talosians say, well, if you leave me one, you might as well leave me none.
Right.
And Vina says, I can't. When they crashed, I was so badly injured, and the Talosians never saw a human before that they kind of guessed as to what a human looked like. It's not so much just that she's physically unattractive, because who cares? But you got the impression, or I got a better impression from the cage and the menagerie that her existence without the Talosians' mental help was just one of chronic, intense pain because they had just done a bad job of putting her together.
She does make note that when with the Talosians' help, she doesn't have to be disfigured.
Yeah, but disfigured to me is different than misformed.
Oh, yeah, she's horribly misformed. She's hunchback. She's stooped. Right. But I she's got terrible scars. She's in terrible shape.
She is, but I think they did a better job. I think they could have done more.
She basically reveals that Burnham is available. And so Burnham shows up and confirms basically everything that we've already talked about, that Section 31 has kind of pulled a double cross. They can't talk via the communicator or through subspace because Section 31 might be listening.
Mm-hmm.
She fills Pike in on the fact that she has seen Spock's memories and then he didn't murder anyone.
Yes.
And then she reveals that Spock is there.
Yes.
And so Pike now knows what he needs to do. He needs to head to Talos IV.
Yes.
And I'm going to cover it. Just say it briefly because we're going to talk about this a bit later. They can't use the spore drive because someone sabotaged it.
Yes.
And that's part of, because like I said, we kind of bifurcated this discussion and that'll come up in a bit.
Yeah.
So they have to go to warp. Meanwhile, while they're headed there, it's time for Burnham to pay the price because Spock and Burnham are getting on the shuttle. Vina tells Burnham that she should do this voluntarily because she doesn't want to do it. She tells her that if you don't do it, it's going to be really bad when they extract it from you by force.
Yep.
And so she goes through with it. And this is about the time she was getting ready to run away. Spock wants to come with her. He mm-hmm. looks up to her and he is pleading with her. She promised to show him the ways of Earth and that they could possibly go there and live there one day.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he idolizes his big sister.
Yes.
In a major, major way. I mean, you know, we've got kids and we've seen the younger one idolize the older one. This is spot on.
Yes,
this
spot on. It was very, very well done.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Burnham is trying to run away because she's afraid of the logic extremists that are essentially assailing this family.
Yep.
And she believes that as long as she's there, that Spock, Sarek, and Amanda will never be safe.
Right.
And she can't have Spock come with her because that's not remedying the situation.
Right.
So she tries to be nice briefly.
Briefly.
And when it doesn't work, she starts to get nasty. You know, she's calling it your family. He's calling it our family. And then she's like, I don't want you to come with me. I didn't want you to run around to begin with. You're not worth me wasting my time.
Right.
You're incapable of emotions. And then the biggest insult to the whole thing is that she calls him a half-breed.
Yes.
There was a gasp in our house when that happened.
Yes, there was.
My jaw dropped. This scene surprised me that it lived up to the expectations.
I agree. I credit to the writer's room because I understand why Burnham, especially a child Burnham, felt the need to do all that. I understood why she felt like she had, why in her desperation to get out, in her just emotional state and frantically trying to protect her family, she went that far.
Mm-hmm.
But that was wrong.
Oh, and absolutely. No doubt. And she says that. She freely admits
to it. She does. And she apologizes. And what one of the things I loved about this episode is that Spock goes, I understand why you did it. You still did it. And we will be professional. Mm-hmm. But we're not family.
Yeah, I didn't bring you here for your absolution.
Right.
And he says, and in fact, he says, I am grateful that you did it at this point because it helped me understand that I needed to base my life on logic rather than emotion.
And that's why I think Amanda figured out what must have happened
mm-hmm.
because she saw in her son a complete rejection of everything emotional and human that hadn't been there before.
Mm-hmm.
And Amanda has always wondered what flipped that switch, and then she knew.
Right.
And so it was. So one of the reasons why Amanda is so angry at Burnham is because Spock rejected, to Amanda, Spock rejected her
mm-hmm.
because when he rejected humanity.
Right. Well, that's a good observation. And this does not get any prettier here because as they continue to talk, Spock is going on about how he's grounded himself in logic. He's grounded himself now in time. Time, logic, and emotion have all failed him. So he has nothing that is grounding him. You know, this could be the defining moment for civilization as they know it. And he is not ready for this.
Right.
And I can't remember what exactly that Burnham says. And yet he retorts immediately, don't try to psychoanalyze me, Burnham. Better minds have tried and failed. Ouch. Again, two are really going after each other. I mean, we got decades of pent-up anger and grief
mm-hmm.
here. And then, but, you know, Michael very wisely points out, it's like, yeah, that may be the case, but yet you brought me, you know, you sought me out. You brought me here. And then, you know, doubling down on what he said earlier, Spock says, I realized it was foolish to idolize you and I regret it deeply.
Was just out for blood.
I was like, wow, for someone who is so embracing logic, you are cutting to the core. I mean, these are not things that you say out of logic. There is a kernel of anger and resentment at the heart of that. Anyway, so they're set to leave Talos IV. Discovery's on the way. Vina and the Talosians inform them, you guys are in danger because they're not going to get here in time.
Right.
And sure enough, as we see Discovery and Warp, the Section 31 ship is right behind. Okay, really cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
I don't know what kind of warp drive. This is transwarp or if it's like In Darkness, the J.J. Second James movie when the other ship was able to go, you know, some sort of transwarp as well. But it catches right up and demands that they get drop out of warp. Again, there's this kind of this mystery here. Well, how did Section 31 know what was going on here?
Yeah.
And but we'll get to that again. Stick a pin in that. We'll get back to that discussion here. So they get out of warp. Pike had ordered that they immediately begin scanning for life forms. They do find Burnham and Pike, and just as they're about to transport them up to the ship, the Section 31 ship arrives and also locks onto them. And here's the problem. It's like they can't have two locks because, as Leland points out, it'll rip them apart atom by atom.
Yeah.
So as when Pike is trying to figure out what to do, Vina appears again over his shoulder and encourages him to let them go, let this all go. And so he does and says, you know, goodbye, Vina, you know, he kind of says a farewell, which we know is not final.
No.
But so he does. And at that point, we go to the Section 31 ship and they beam up Spock and Burnham.
Or do they?
Not so fast. I love this moment.
This was great.
So the Section 31 ship leaves. Leland says, you ordered a report to Starbase 11. I will note my after-action report that you cooperated, but you're all to go there and await disciplinary action.
Yep.
It's like, how cheery. Thanks for the cooperation. And this is right after Cornwall, you know, had ordered these guys to cooperate a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
But it proves this was all a ruse, that Burnham and Spock are on the Section 31 ship as a projection by the Talosians, an illusion.
Right, and it's only kind of, you know, and you sort of get that it's falling apart because Saru says there's this shuttle that's coming in, and what should we do? And Pike's like, yeah, no, it's good, let the shuttle in.
And don't hail them, because they didn't want Section 31 to catch on.
Right, but and let them in.
Let them in. And so, you know, Leyland says, it's like, you know, says to Spock, it's like, you know, explain what's going on. If you do, it'll go, this will go easier. And Burnham says, well, I beg to differ. And she says, turns to Spock and say, you know, say goodbye, bye, Spock. And I love the fact that it's kind of breaking character and the mood that was established in their prior scene when they were at each other's throats. But he turns to Leyland, holds up the Vulcan salute and says, goodbye, bye, Spock.
And they disappear. And the thing is about that is, I understand that it's a Talosian projection, or Talosian projection, but there is so much of, like, later Spock and, like, the, like, hold your horse, Captain, and that kind of stuff. Like, the weird, you know, it was so, it's so in line with what Spock's humor is throughout.
From the, you know, for me, it was, it, this was, that was a callback to the humor from the movies.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean. This, like, yeah. I mean, that's, like, that Spock's sense of humor, and it's, like, I mean, and yes, it's a really, really, really old joke, but it's going to be around forever. And the fact that Spock kind of calls it out, I was like, that's my boy.
It was so good. It was so good. So on the Section 31 ship, well, I'm getting ahead. Actually, let's back up a bit. So they get onto the shuttle arrives on Discovery. Michael and Pike are down there to greet them. And, you know, Spock and Burnham come marching down the shuttle and Pike greets them, and you know, Pike says something to the effect of, like, is that a smile I detected on your face? And Spock says, I believe it is.
Yes.
So I kind of feel like we skipped over something here. We went from a whole lot of anger and hurt feelings to a whole lot of relief and happiness. But
I think Spock is legitimately grateful to be back with Pike. I think that is also a callback to the menagerie cage scene when he's smiling. So it's just sort of a little throwback to that. And
yeah, but it's just such a tonal shift.
No, it is a total shift. And that's one of my, like, oh, we'll have to sort of keep an eye on that. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things, and we'll talk about it more when we go through the B story, this is one of the first episodes where Discovery and its crew and Burnham face consequences for what they have done in the past.
Oh, yeah.
And so
lots of them,
lots of them. And it was good and it was necessary. So Spock being like, yeah, Burnham, you're sorry. And I get that you're sorry and whatevs. I know that's not Spock, but you know what? You did something awful and I'm not going to forgive you for it. And then at the end of this episode, it's like, oh, but maybe that, you know, the banter is still there. So we'll see.
Right. So at this point, basically what's left of this storyline is that, Spock explains what's going on with Red Angel to Pike, and they're all now fugitives. Spock says we have one course of action, which is to run, which is a nicely delivered line. And Pike is about to give his speech about how he can't ask anyone to go along with his mission because they're betraying the Federation. And Detmer interrupts him, like, of course, heading captain. And you know, Tilly follows it up. It's like, you know, we should get a move on. And so it was a kind of nice rallying moment. But, you know, before we move on, we got to kind of have to speed this up a little bit. But you go back to the Section 31 ship, and Georgiou was making the remark that back in the Terran Empire, the Talosians tried to use the illusions on her once, and she wiped them and their singing plants off the face of the planet. I cannot get enough of her. No, she has so many.
The Section 31 show cannot come fast enough.
Yeah, and then Leland made the remark. He's like, you could have told me about that. And to which she responds, is like, and what? Miss you trying to explain this to the Admiral?
Yeah.
So, okay. So we got two other little side stories we need to cover, and we're going to kind of get through them quickly. The first is Hugh.
Yes.
He is not adjusting well to having come back. Not that I blame him. That's an incredible trauma, having been killed and sent to an alternate dimension.
Well, and remember being dead.
Yeah.
And remember what happened to you after you died. And remembering coming back to life. That's gotta mess you up.
Yeah, but Stamets is trying his best to return things to normal for Hugh. Perhaps he's trying a little too hard and acting like nothing happened.
Yeah.
But he prepares one of Culber's favorite dishes, And Culber's not enjoying it. And when Stamets is kind of asking what's wrong, Culber says, look, I have a memory of this being my favorite, but it's not syncing up right now. It's not in this body. And, you know, and Culber just, he's angry. He's venting. And I felt bad for Stamets because he doesn't understand this. You know, when you see, he's had a very large change in personality over the course of the last season that's carried into the season. He's kind of a different person than mm-hmm. when we first met him.
Yeah.
But he's doing his best. He's this, it's this outreach, and he's trying to make things as familiar and as best as he can for Culber. And he says, I don't understand why you're so mad at me. And my heart broke for him.
Because, you know, Hugh went through a lot. Mm-hmm. Hugh went through a lot hard. So did Paul.
Yeah.
You know, he watched his husband die. He lived without his husband.
He was prepared to leave Discovery because of this.
Because of this. He has been hanging out with... He's been forced to be on the same ship as the person who killed his husband. Like, everyone needs therapy. Like, mm-hmm. Deanna Troi needs to, like, come a little faster.
Right.
So that she can work through it. So my heart broke very much for both of them. And I think... As much as this, and, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about Saru's line later about how this is, there's no code to this. As much as this felt like if this crazy situation was possible, this was unfortunately what was happening.
Right. So, Culber storms out by saying, you know, after Stamets had just asked, why are you so mad at me? You know, Culber says, that's a very good question, Paul. And
it is.
And he goes after Ash, because who he'd just seen out in the hall.
How are they on the same floor?
I don't know. I mean, I'm very confused by Discovery's layout at times.
Yeah.
Because you got parts of the ship that spin and parts that don't and some that rotate.
I guess that's true. And, there might only be a few places where you could put a person.
Where's the engineering lab? I mean, I don't understand. The only two things that I know for certain where they are the bridge and the docking bay. Because you can identify them from the outside of the ship. But
that's fair. Moving on.
You know, Culber goes and confronts Ash in the mess hall.
Yeah.
And he storms up there and is throwing his food off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Ash is just like, well, he knew this moment was coming because he did catch a glimpse of Culber looking at him.
Yes.
And he basically says to Culber's like, I can't expect you to understand, but I'm sorry. And I don't know what else he necessarily would have said, especially if you're very shocked by what's going on. I mean, you're kind of in the moment. What do you say to the man that you killed when you weren't in your right mind that's now come back from the dead?
Yeah.
And so Culber lays into him, and all the officers in the mess are standing up to do something, and Saru says, no, we have to let this play out. And everyone's like, are you crazy? So they beat on each other for a bit.
Yep.
And then eventually get to a standstill, and Culber looks up at Ash and says, I don't even know who I am. To which Ash replies, tell me about it. I mean,
Culber's whole thing is, all right, if Vok is who I need to beat the poop out of, bring out Vok. And Ash is like, it does not work that way. Mm-hmm. And actually what I appreciated about that scene, among other things, is that it didn't work that way. Nope. I kept waiting for there to be some like Klingon snap, and it never happened.
Right.
For which I am grateful.
So, getting to what you were alluding to earlier, Saru and Pike are talking about this confrontation, and Saru, you know, Pike says something to Saru's like, so you just let them fight? And Saru confirms that, and Pike says, well, not exactly by the book. And what was Saru's line?
Something general. I'm not going to get it right, so I'm not going to try, but that there's nothing in the Uniform Code of Conduct about what the correct protocol is for a human
who's had Klingon drafted onto his bones
who's confronted by the man returned from the dead. And you know,
and the way Doug Jones delivered that was beautiful
because you're like, okay, I don't agree with you. I don't think you should have let that fight happen. You should not have let it gone as far as it did, but point taken.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a bit catharsis,
but Pike says, we're going to stick to the uniform code of conduct.
Yeah, we are.
We're going to get back to some Starfleet ideals here. We don't solve our problems with violence.
Yeah. Saru, walk yourself to HR, would you, dear?
So eventually this gets back into Stamets' quarters. Hugh's yelling at Stamets. You know, he isn't the same. The situation is the same. And Hugh tells Stamets, you know, you need to move forward. And then Hugh storms off to where we don't know exactly. But right. That's kind of, I think we've covered this story. We've got a lot to happen with Hugh going forward.
One little side note that I thought was interesting, and it probably doesn't matter, but I want to call it out. Hugh comments that Paul hasn't gotten rid of any of his stuff. Paul makes a noise about returning things, sending stuff to his mom, but he couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Does Hugh's mother know Hugh is back?
I have no idea.
I know. It was never mentioned.
No way of knowing. Okay. Well, one last bit that we have to go over, because we're getting a bit long here, but we kind of have this invasion / hacking plot line that started in the last episode when before the shuttle and probe were detonated, the probe was hacking Discovery and hacked Arium. And so, you know, with that as a backdrop, there's a couple things that go on that cast a whole bunch of suspicion in this episode that all lands on Ash.
Yes, it does.
Which is that when Pike calls for the Black Alert, when they're going to go to Talos IV, and I was talking about this earlier, it doesn't work because the spore drive has been sabotaged. So they have to go to warp. And so who sabotaged the spore drive? Well, naturally, Section 31 doesn't want them getting there.
Right.
So, you know, there's a Section 31 agent on board. Everyone suspects it's Ash.
Yep.
Seems a bit obvious, but there it is. And then later, Saru informs Pike that someone has transmitted three times several terabytes of information off the ship, but they're not sure where.
Right.
And at the time, he doesn't know who it is.
Right.
Then later in the episode, after Section 31 is on their tail, everyone is suspecting Ash.
Yep.
Because how else would Section 31 know where they are?
Right.
And then more evidence. Saru then figures out that it was Ash's signature or command codes that were used to send those signals out later. And Ash is just kind of like, well, in the face of this evidence, I don't know how I can deny it, but I am denying it.
See, which is, it was awesome on like 100 different levels. One is, of course, that Ash has this history of not being in complete control of his body. So obviously people are like, oh gosh, Vok is back. The also very cool thing is if you look at the scene in which this is happening, you have Pike basically in the center. Mm-hmm. And there's Ash on one side and Arya on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And he like, Pike goes, turns basically to Ash. And I'm like, no, the other side. Right, yeah. Go to the other side.
And while this is all going on, like when it concludes and they confine Ash to his quarters, you get that glimpse of Arium and the three red dots show up over her retina.
But when Pike is accusing Ash, she is looking at her station. Uh-huh. She is just, I'm doing the work. You don't even have to worry
about
me.
Sending something then. But exactly. I mean, I think it's pretty clear. And especially when we get the preview of next week's episode.
Oh, yeah.
That this was Arium all along.
Yes.
That was going on. And so this is about to resolve itself. But yeah, that's that storyline. So Ash is confined to quarters. Discovery is now on the lam with its crew as they're trying to figure out what to do to help Spock and investigate the red signals.
Mm-hmm.
You got any other final thoughts about this episode?
No, I just, you know, something. One of the things I really like about Discovery is how bingeable it is. And this is, I said last week that I felt this was like the transition to the second. I mean, it was literally the middle, but that it was. We're moving things along, and I felt like this one really picked up and moved things along. I liked that Spock was talking and Spock was moving things forward. And to your point, Spock felt very Spock, but that there were consequences and they were heartbreaking, but it was time. I mean, it was time we dealt with the fact that Culber is suffering and that Stamets is suffering and that Burnham made mistakes. And so, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I love this episode. It's not my favorite of the season, but when I saw the Talosians were going to be on this last week, I was like, are you kidding me? But
well, the Talosians are creepy. They're legitimately creepy.
And this episode started off so dark, but it had so many excellent scenes. There was such great acting in this. I love that during the memory scenes, the actors are flashing back and forth to when they're, you know, they were interchanged as kids and adults, and they're delivering the lines. And you know, we saw
baby Spock, both
the child Spock and the adult Spock both crying
in reaction to what's going on.
And then just the, it's predictable. It's a bit of a trope with what's going on with Ash and the sabotage and the area and stuff like that. But I really like the way it's played out. And Shahzad Latif, the actor's name, he did a great job.
He did a great job.
Just the disbelief, but what can I do, written all over his face. Well, he didn't even have to say it. I mean, you could just read. And the acting this season has been incredible. I hope once award season rolls around that these actors get recognized for this. If nothing else in this series does this season, I hope the acting does. I was not familiar with TJ Scott prior to seeing this episode, but hats off to him. He directed a hell of an episode. I hope to see him do this again. He did one episode last week, which was The Wolf Within, which was when the Horror Elevations of Ash's Vok was coming out.
Yeah.
So he's got some experience, but, so I'm very excited to see what's going to happen next week, but, that'll do it. For our discussion of If Memory Serves, which was a very appropriate title.
Yes.
We'll be back next week with some more Star Trek discussion. But before we go, Beth, where can all of our listeners find us on the social media?
We can be reached on Twitter at Warp Trails, on Instagram and Facebook, both at Warp Trails Pod, or we can be reached by email at warptrails@retrozap.com. And we are on the Discord server under Warp Trails.
Yeah, I just go to the RetroZap Discord server and then look for the Warp Trails room, and we're there. Not a whole lot of conversations been happening there, but there's been a lot of fun discussions in a lot of the other rooms as well. But we love talking Star Trek, so head on over there and give us a shout. Our show is part of the RetroZap Podcast Network. Head over to RetroZap.com for other great podcasts covering everything from collecting, video games, Dune, Game of Thrones, Star Wars, and a whole lot more. That includes my Star Wars podcast with Darth Taxis and Jay Krebs, which is Starship Sabers and Scoundrels. Our theme music is Wasp from Faces by Misha Dixon, which is available on the Free Music Archive. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Live long and prosper, and we'll talk to you next time.
Say goodbye, Spock.
Goodbye, Spock.